Thank you. Thank you. Now, you've made my life difficult because you've had so many great speakers up here, so many great introducers that I don't know what is left to be said, but I'll try. And I want to say, to begin with, that I am here today and back in Wisconsin, not just because my wonderful and longtime friend, Ed Garvey, has asked me to be here, not just because my longtime friend John Nichols has asked me to be here, but because from the bottom of my heart, I wanted to express to all of you and to the people of Wisconsin my profound respect and admiration for your great courage and determination to stand up to right-wing extremism and you're fighting on behalf of working people. Your struggle, as I hope you understand, has not only impacted the people of Wisconsin, it has been seen and heard all over this country and, in fact, all over the world. And you give an inspiration to working people, and I thank you very much for that. Let me begin my remarks by telling you, in many ways, what you already know. And that is that the problems facing our country today, in many ways, are more severe than at any time since the Great Depression. And in fact, when you look at issues like global warming, they are even more severe. In terms of economics, let us be honest and publicly acknowledge reality, something that our media very often doesn't do. And that is, as you well know, that class warfare is being waged in America and that the wrong side is winning. You know, some of the wealthiest people in this country and some of the largest corporations have in recent years become very, very religious. Unfortunately, their religion has nothing to do with compassion or love or concern with their fellow human beings. It has everything to do with greed and power. They want more and more and more, and they do not care how many children they step on to get it, how many elderly people they hurt to get it. They have been relentless. And our message to them today, here in Wisconsin, in Vermont, and all across our country is, enough is enough. This country belongs to all of us and not just a handful of Wall Street crooks. Today in America, as you know only too painfully, the middle class, the great middle class of our country, the middle class that has been the envy of the entire world, that middle class is collapsing, poverty is increasing, while the wealthiest people in this country have never had it so good. That is what is going on now, and that is what we are determined to change. Today, as a result of the greed, the recklessness, and the illegal behavior of the crooks on Wall Street who caused this recession, over 16% of our people are unemployed, 25 million Americans. And those numbers are even higher for minorities, for young people, and for blue-collar workers. The construction industry, for example, is in the midst of a severe depression. Today, millions of Americans are working longer hours for lower wages. From Vermont to Wisconsin to California, there are workers who do have jobs, but who are earning substantially less than they earned 20 years ago. Can all of you appreciate what it's like for somebody to be struggling, working year after year after year, and now at the age of 50 or 60, to be earning substantially less than they earned 20 years ago? Do you know why the American people are angry? That's why they're angry. There are a lot of reasons as to why the middle class is collapsing. Certainly, the anti-union efforts on the part of corporate America have been significant, because if we do not have workers, public and private, engaged in collective bargaining, fighting for a living wage, not only do those workers suffer, but every worker in America suffers as we engage in a race to the bottom. Let me give you some good news, some bad news. Good news is that after the significant layoffs in Detroit, Michigan, in the automobile industry, Chrysler and some of the other companies started to rehire. They brought back thousands of workers. That's the good news. You know what the bad news is? Those workers, new workers, young workers, are earning 50% wage of what the older workers are making, from $28 an hour to $14 an hour. The automobile industry, as you very well know, in the Midwest, has been the gold standard for blue-collar employment in America. If wages are cut in the auto industry with a strong union, what are workers around the country going to be earning without a union? And the answer is starvation wages. That's why we need to build and expand the union movement and defend public employees' rights to organize. And let me give you another reason why the middle class is collapsing and poverty is increasing. Tom Hartman mentioned this, but it's worth mentioning again, because you're not going to see too much of it on NBC or CBS. And that is, if you can believe it, it's an astounding fact. In the last 10 years, over 50,000 factories in America have been shut down, and over 5 million good-paying manufacturing jobs have been lost. 50,000 factories in 10 years. My state of Vermont never has been a major manufacturing center, but it has provided over the years, as probably every other state in the country, good-paying jobs. In the last 7 or 8 years, we have lost 25% of our manufacturing jobs, and that's being seen all over America. And let's be clear, these are not just blue-collar jobs, as important as that is. These are white-collar jobs. These are engineering jobs. These are research and development jobs, people trying to develop the next level of technology. Now, the result of that, as all of you know, is that when you go shopping in a big store, a small store, it is harder and harder to buy products manufactured in the United States of America. In my view, and you don't need a PhD in economics to understand it, no economy is going to be strong if all we are doing is buying and selling products made in China. I want to say a word on another issue that we don't talk about too much in America, and that is poverty. And the reality is that while the middle class in this country is disappearing, poverty in very significant numbers is increasing. Today, over 46 million Americans are living below the poverty line. That is the largest number on record. Largest number on record. Rich get richer, and we have the largest number of people living in poverty in our history. And let me tell you, you want to talk about shame? I'll tell you something about shame. Shame is when the United States has the dubious distinction of having by far the highest rate of childhood poverty. Almost 22% of our children are living in poverty. This compares to Denmark, less than 4%, France and Germany, less than 10%. This is the future of our country. 22% of our kids not getting the education, not getting the nutrition, not getting the support they need to grow up, to get do well in life, to be productive members of society. That is a national shame that we must never accept. Let me tell you something else about poverty. I think when people think about poverty, you say, well, poverty is really bad. You know, people live in substandard housing. People may not have a car, or they're driving an old car. People's clothing may not be as nice as some other people. Poverty is really bad. Let me tell you something more about poverty. We just did a hearing. I'm chairman of a committee on primary care. Did a hearing just this week in D.C. And we had some brilliant physicians coming before us, talking about some of the studies they have done. And here's a study, here's a fact that many people don't know. Poverty is not just discomfort. Poverty is not just a lack of material goods. Poverty is a death sentence. If you are in the bottom 20% of income earners, you will die 6.5 years earlier than if you are in the top 20%. Poverty is a death sentence, and we have got to eliminate that form of capital punishment. And when we talk about national disgraces, and when we talk about what's happening in America today, let us not forget for one moment that the United States is the only major country on earth that does not guarantee health care to all of its people as a right. Today, Today, despite the fact that 50 million Americans have no health insurance, 50 million, and millions more are underinsured with high deductibles, high premiums, despite the fact that 45,000 people, according to a Harvard study, are going to die this year because they don't have health insurance, because they don't get to a doctor when they should. Despite all of that, this wasteful and bureaucratic system that we have today ends up costing us almost twice as much per person as any other healthcare system in the world. That is an outrage. And that is why we are determined, and my hope is that Vermont will lead the nation in that direction, that the day is going to come when we are going to have a Medicare for all single-payer system guaranteeing health care to all of our people. If morality means anything, if decency means anything, we are going to reach the day when healthcare becomes a right in America and not a privilege. Now, I've touched on very briefly, what is happening to the middle class of this country, although I did not have to tell you that. You already knew that. That's what our lives are about. And I've talked a little bit about poverty, but I also want to take a moment to talk about another reality that is going on economically in this country. And that is, while we have the highest rate of childhood poverty, while 45,000 Americans die every year because they don't get to a doctor when they should, while we have major problems in homelessness, while 16% of our people are unemployed, there is another economic reality. And that is the wealthiest people in this country and the largest corporations in America today, in the midst of all of that pain and misery, those people are doing phenomenally well. Today in America, once again, we have the dubious distinction of having by far the most unequal distribution of income and wealth of any major country on earth, and that also has got to end. Now, CBS and NBC and ABC and public broadcasting don't talk about it too much, so I'll talk about it. And that is to tell you that the top 1% now earns more income than the bottom 50%. And the wealthiest 400 people in this country, that's what you got around here, just this perimeter right here, 400 people own more wealth than the bottom half of American society, 150 million Americans. 400, 150. The percentage of income going to the top 1% has nearly tripled since the 1970s, and during a very recent 25-year period, 80% of all new income generated went to the top 1%. Working people working longer hours for lower wages, poverty is increasing, 80% of all new income goes to the top 1%. Under the Bush administration, the 400 top earners saw their incomes double while their effective federal tax rate was cut almost in half over the past 15 years. Does that sound like justice to you? Further, in the midst of this great debate about deficit reduction, at a time when our Republican friends bemoan high taxes, the wealthy are paying a smaller share of their income in taxes than at any point since the Great Depression. Corporations today are making record-breaking profits while their real effective tax rate is at or near a 60-year low. Today we have a federal tax code that is so unfair that people like Warren Buffett make the point that he, a multi-billionaire, has a real effective tax rate than it is lower than the office workers who work for him. Hedge fund managers who made $1 billion last year now pay a lower effective tax rates than many teachers, nurses, firefighters, and police officers. That is not justice. We need a tax system which is fair, which is progressive, and which tells the wealthiest people in this country to start paying their fair share of taxes. A couple of months ago, we released a study in Washington, my office did, talking about the tax situation with regard to some of the largest corporations and Wall Street firms in America. And I urge you to read it. Let me just give you a few examples right now. And this has everything in the world to do, not just with decency and justice, but with the deficit reduction situation that we're facing right now. Because the choices that we are going to have to make is whether we cut programs for children, the elderly, healthcare, the environment, or whether, in fact, we ask those who are getting away with murder in the tax code to start paying their fair share. Let me just give you some examples. ExxonMobil, you remember our friends ExxonMobil, that struggling small company who treats the American people with such respect and dignity when we fill up our gas tank. In 2009, ExxonMobil made $19 billion in profits. Actually, not a particularly good year for ExxonMobil, only $19 billion. But on the other hand, not only did Exxon avoid paying any federal income taxes that year, they actually received a $156 million rebate from the IRS. That's the oil company. Now we go to our good friends on Wall Street, whose honesty, integrity, and concern for the American people is legendary. Last year, good friends at Bank of America received a $1.9 billion tax refund from the IRS, even though it made $4.4 billion in profits. Not to mention that we bailed their ass out a few years ago. General Electric, whose president, CEO, is the leader, the co-chairman of the President's Council of Job Creation or whatever. General Electric, over the past 5 years, while they made $26 billion in profit in the United States, they received a $4.1 billion refund from the IRS. And the list goes on and on and on. But the bottom line is that corporate tax revenue last year was down by 27% compared to 2000, even though corporate profits are up 60% over the last decade. In 2005, one out of four large corporations paid no income taxes, no federal income taxes, even though they made over $1 trillion in revenue. So, if we are serious about dealing with deficit reduction, if we believe that we should not be cutting education, nutrition, or environmental protection, we are going to end these outrageous loopholes. And let me tell you some of the other things we're going to do. Last year, and for many years, tax breaks, we give, you'll be all delighted to know this, we give tax breaks for companies who are outsourcing American jobs to the tune of over $500 billion during a 10-year period. Maybe it's time to end that absurdity. You want to do deficit reduction? What about telling corporations and the wealthy who are stashing huge amounts of money in tax havens in the Cayman Islands and Bermuda that cost us $100 billion a year? Maybe we're going to end those absurd tax loopholes. And when we talk about deficit reduction, let's also be mindful that military spending has tripled in the last 10 years. What about ending the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and bringing the troops home? My point is a simple one. It's a simple one. The deficit situation today, which is caused by the wars and tax breaks for the rich and the Wall Street bailout and the recession, is a serious problem. I do not want to leave a huge debt and deficit to my children and grandchildren. But we can deal with deficit reduction in a way that is fair and responsible by getting at the root cause of the problem and asking those who have caused the problem to pay for it rather than the children and the elderly. Now, deficit reduction is a very serious problem, but there is an issue that is even more important. And that is that now, today, we have got to begin creating the millions of jobs our working people desperately need. And here's how we can do it. Here's how we can do it. As you have heard and as you know, our infrastructure is crumbling. It is not just roads or bridges or tunnels or culverts. It is wastewater plants. It is water systems. It is the fact that in terms of rail, we are falling behind virtually every other major country on Earth. China itself, just China, is spending 9% of its GDP on infrastructure. We are spending 2.2%. The time is now to rebuild our roads, bridges, our schools, our crumbling infrastructure. When we do that, we make our nation more productive, we make us more internationally competitive, and we create millions of good-paying jobs. You want to create jobs? I'll tell you another way we do that. We are importing in this country every year $350 billion of oil from Saudi Arabia and other foreign countries. I was in Saudi Arabia some years ago. I met with the royal Saudi family. Let me tell you, don't worry about them. They are doing just fine. They don't need any more money from Wisconsin and Vermont. $350 billion importing foreign oil. What we have got to do is use that money to move toward energy efficiency, move toward sustainable energy, wind, solar, geothermal, biomass, move toward a strong public transportation system, and when you do that, you create millions of good-paying jobs. Right now, in Wisconsin, in Vermont, all over this country, in the midst of a major educational crisis, where in many respects our kids are falling behind the children of other countries, where college education has become unaffordable for millions of working families, where kids are graduating $25,000, $30,000, $50,000 in debt. In the midst of all of that, if you can believe it, we are laying off hundreds of thousands of teachers and childcare workers. We're laying off police officers and firemen. Let's put those people back to work. Let's create the best educational system in the world. In terms of job creation, last but not least, and there are many other ideas out there.
We love you, Bernie!
Thank you. I love you too. Wisconsin is my second favorite state. You know, we do have a lot in common. You guys have the second best cheddar cheese in America. That's... Back to jobs. We'll put the cheddar cheese aside. That debate will wait for another day. But an issue that we have got to talk about, and I think Tom Hartman touched on it, and I cannot tell you how tough this issue is, because all of corporate America is united on this. Virtually every editorial page in America is united on this. And that is, they want to continue these disastrous trade policies, NAFTA, CAFTA, permanent normal trade relations with China. President Obama is bringing forward some of Bush's trade policies in Colombia, Panama, and South Korea. And our message has got to be pretty clear about that. And that is, corporate America, every night you go home, you turn on the TV, and they're telling you how you got to buy all of these products. You got to buy cars, and you got to buy shirts, and you got to buy sneakers, you got to buy everything, radios, televisions. If they want us to buy their products, and they surely do because we are the most powerful market, wealthiest market in the world, if they want us to buy their products, they're going to have to start building those products here in the United States and rebuild our manufacturing sector. Think about America. Think about an America where we are building new factories rather than shutting them down, where our kids have good jobs, our engineers have good jobs. That's the future of America. Let them build them here, not in China, not in Vietnam. Now, one other point I want to discuss, which I'll be dealing with as soon as I get back in D.C. We're dealing with it right now. And that is, you know, a lot of people are becoming frustrated and angry and disillusioned with the political process. Sometimes they look around and they don't know the difference between the Democrats and Republicans or whether, in fact, there is a difference. And what you heard recently with right-wing Republicans leading the effort, but some Democrats, including the president, also talking about it, is these guys are saying, well, we have a large deficit. We're going to have to cut Social Security. We're going to have to cut Medicare, and we're going to have to cut Medicaid. Now, here's the good news, and I speak now to you as the chairman of the Defending Social Security Caucus in Washington. Do you know why they hate Social Security? They hate Social Security because it has succeeded in doing exactly what it was supposed to have done. It is a huge success story. Before Social Security, 50% of the seniors in this country lived in poverty. Today, while the number is too high, it is only 10%, and we're providing assistance to people with disability and widows and orphans. And we do that in a cost-effective way. A few years ago, millions of people lost their life savings, they lost their homes on Wall Street when Wall Street collapsed. But over a 76-year period, Social Security has never, ever failed to pay out every nickel owed to every eligible American. That's a pretty damn good record. And when they tell you that Social Security is going bankrupt, that's a lie. Unmitigated. Social Security, according to the Congressional Budget Office, has a $2.5 trillion surplus, can pay out every benefit owed to every eligible American for the next 27 years. I've just introduced legislation last week which will take that 27 years of solvency, making it 75 years by lifting the cap and asking the wealthiest people to start paying into the system. So all of the lies and disinformation that is going on Social Security has got to be exposed. All you have to do, it's not very complicated. You start at, right now, a millionaire pays the same into the Social Security Trust Fund as somebody making $106,000. You lift that cap, you start at $250,000. You have enough money for 75 years, and that is what we're going to do. And I am happy to tell you that according to the newspapers today, and some of us have been working very hard on this, despite some rumblings in the past, the president has said that when he announces his deficit reduction package, Social Security will not be included in that. But we have also got to tell that super committee in Congress that we're not going to accept cuts in Medicare or Medicaid as well. Let me just conclude by saying this. I know that in my state, in your state, and all over this country, these are incredibly difficult times. I see people in Vermont all of the times, and the stories they are telling me are heartbreaking. The dreams they have for their kids, they're seeing disappear right in front of their eyes. I got old people, people who have saved up their entire lives, who don't know how they're going to live out their remaining years. I see this every day, and it breaks my heart, and it breaks your heart. The struggle that we are engaged in right now is of pivotal importance to the future of this country. Whether we win or lose will determine the future of America. That struggle is not just for our lives. More importantly, it is for our children and our grandchildren. All of us are so proud of this country. My father came to this country without a nickel in his pocket, and this country worked for him. He never made any money, but he raised two kids in a way he never could have done from where he came from. And that is true for probably almost everybody in this room. So many wonderful and great things in this country. We are proud of so much. And our solemn promise today is that we are going to continue the effort, because despair is not an option. I know that people get angry. I know you get frustrated. I know you get disgusted. But we don't have the right not to be involved. And let me conclude on this note. There is nothing, you know, I am known and you are known. We are progressives. We're proud of it. But I want to tell you something. There is nothing that I have said to you today, not one policy that I have outlined to you, that the vast majority of the American people do not agree with. You go out. There was a study, there was a poll that came out a couple of months ago. Poll for Tea Party sympathizers. And they say to them, do you think we should cut Medicare and Medicaid? Overwhelmingly, they said no. So our job is to simply bring to fruition what the overwhelming majority of the American people want. And that is, they want an economy which works for the middle class and working families, not just for the rich. They want everybody in this country to have health care as a right. They want to protect Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. They want to move away from these gross inequalities in income and wealth. So we have the people behind us. They have the money, we have the people. And at the end of the day, the people will be stronger than the money. Thank you all very much. Went on too long.